Would you like to enter our raffle?
Win dinner with a real astronaut? Okay, I like space. Ever since I was a child, I was always fascinated by Major Tony Nelson's failed space flight, his capsule crash landing on a desert island, knocking over a genie bottle, or releasing Barbara Eden.
Thank you, NASA. She was his slave.
TBTL.
Not true, of course, but cheer louder. Yeah.
Look, I get it. I'm not always fun to be around. I can be loud and abrasive. My breath. The doctors say I have incurable stink tongue.
So tired of you getting angry and yelling all the time. It's exhausting. I feel like I'm partners with the Hulk.
Pretty good.
Oh my God, man, we have seen some shit we ain't never seen before.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everybody to a Thursday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Explaining how a show works means the show's already in trouble.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
As Jay would say, he's got flow.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, where it was like 85 degrees sunny yesterday. And right now, looking out over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain, which is hidden by clouds, it is torrentially raining.
I'm not crying. It's just been raining on my face.
Like, look. The deal with living in the Pacific Northwest seems to be it's kind of gray and clammy and rainy for most of the year outside of a like 2.5 month period of time. And that starts from July 4th and goes until maybe, if you're lucky, the second week of September. And the implicit deal with the weather gods is that we will put up with all of that rain during the rest of the year if we are granted 2+ months of uninterrupted sunshine. And the weather gods have reneged on their promise, and I am not happy about it. I am happy that we've arrived together at episode 3,222 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
We've also arrived at our... Let's see here. 12, maybe, of what I'm going to be attempting and hoping will be a 34-hour fast.
Never do anything out of hunger. Not even eating.
This is part of my 60-day challenge that I have launched out on, which it seems like it's each day I get a new email or read a new piece of information on the internet, and then I modify the 60-day challenge. I am still, though... I'm committed to my goal of losing 20 pounds by October the 2nd. How do you know that I'm committed to that? It's literally the only thing written on my giant wall calendar behind me. That's it. It has on the 3rd of August, it says day one, and it lists my weight. And then on the 2nd of October, it just says minus 20. I think we're going to do it, people. I feel warm, and I'm levitating, and I think we can possibly make it happen. Do people need to have good handwriting anymore? Does that really matter with the way that we text and email and mostly communicate digitally?
Is this a thing people care about?
No.
The fine writer Drew McGarry has launched on a personal... Hey, speaking of personal improvement projects... He's launched one to try to get his handwriting dialed in. He says that your handwriting really is the way, if you would like write a birthday card or a note to someone, your handwriting is kind of the first impression people have of you. And it also says something. You know, people say like, oh, a messy desk is a sign of your mind being cluttered or whatever. He makes the argument that bad handwriting is an indication that you're not handling your biz. And I have such bad handwriting. Something happened to me in Hermiston, Oregon last week related to my handwriting that I'll tell you about. I hope Drew is wrong, because it indicates I got some probs. So we will talk about that also, time permitting. A public broadcasting company in the Netherlands has changed their entire online advertising strategy. They're no longer using cookies.
I call cakes big old cookies.
To track people. You know how that thing happens where you look at some product online and for potential purchasing. And the next thing you know, you're just getting what always seem to be weird versions of that thing. It doesn't seem like any of that cookie, like the advertising history that follows you around and then starts predictively putting things up for you. Never feels like it gets it right for me, but there's actually a different way of doing it. And the implications are that it might actually help save journalism, believe it or not. So we will talk about that if we don't run out of time. Oh, by the way, it's also Thursday, a.k.a. a Blur's Day. So we will do the Blur's Day messages. Hey, here's where that audio drop is.
My birthday today.
You'd think I would just look at the show sheet and then put the appropriate audio in place. But that's not how I do it, you guys. It's not how I do it 12 hours in with no food in my system. Oh, hey, the intro music is done, which means it might be time to talk to this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show, our very favorite Cuyahoga clam. He is Andrew Walsh, and he's joining us right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Is that a first in a long time that I'm getting to you and there's no intro music playing?
What if I told you I'm shortening that music just because I want to be on the mic sooner? So I'm tricking you into thinking that you've been going on for a really long time.
Isn't that for techno geeks with spread?
I don't. Yeah, maybe it is. I don't remember ever talking in the clear. Although I'll be honest, it didn't seem like that was an excessively long intro. I mean, I got plenty of work done during it. I don't know.
Isn't that for techno?
Oh man, what are you doing? What are you doing?
I think part of it is I'm not. You and I were talking about this yesterday before we actually started recording, which is I've been doing this thing where I'm trying to be more mindful about what I'm eating. I'm trying to go to bed a little bit earlier. I'm trying to monitor, you know, kind of my exercise and maybe what I'm drinking. And who knows if it'll have the desired effect or not in terms of the weight loss. But what it has done, you know, 3-4 days in is I feel like I'm coming in hot for the show because I got a good night's sleep. I'm not logy from having eaten 2 to 3 pizzas the night before. I'm not just kind of like crawling in here to the broadcast center, turning on the mic and trying to sort of just gut it out. I am like feeling very, I'm just feeling energetic in the morning now. And I think it's so much energy that I'm now just talking my way through all of the music. In fact, if you want to take the rest of the show off, I can probably just handle it from here.
What's that?
That was me taking the rest of the show off. That was trying to make it sound like I was across the room.
It actually worked.
But I'm still here. I'm still here, Luke. Okay. No, that's fine, though. The more you do, I mean, the question for me, but again, turning it back to me, is it's interesting. I wonder if your energy level would make me more complacent and potentially low energy, or if I would kind of your energy. Yeah, or match your energy a little bit. Something rare happened to me yesterday. I was playing cards with Genevieve, as we do, and she said to me, "How was the show today?" And without thinking, I said, "It was really good." So mark that down in your calendars. But it was.
What was that feeling?
I felt like yesterday was a good show. I don't know why. I don't know if there's anything I can point to that was particularly good. But it just felt like we both had a good energy, good back and forth. Like, I think it's working.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, all, I don't want to obsess on this too much, and because it'll be more embarrassing when I fail spectacularly, which someone should do a podcast. Named
somebody should launch a second season of a podcast about that.
But I've been getting a good number of emails from the listeners about my 60-day challenge and diet talk. And okay, I have a couple questions on that, by the way. But one of the things I was saying to a listener who emailed in today, who was talking about how they had gotten motivated couple years ago, I think there was a live show looming, and I was trying to get down to a certain weight before the live show, and they decided to take to accept the challenge themselves and work on their thing. And again, I will offer the quibby that I must offer each show when we talk about this. Everybody should be the way that feels best to them in their bodies. The point is not that there's one special way to be, but this listener had decided that they wanted to, you know, kind of, I guess, work on their weight situation. And they did. And they had some pretty amazing results. And I was kind of going back and forth. And I said, you know, I feel like there's very little that I can control in the world right now. And I think doing this, and maybe this is false. Maybe this is not a good way for me to soothe myself. But it's feeling to me like I feel very energized and hopeful because I feel like I am taking control of some part of my life. Mm-hmm. And there's just so little that falls into that category for any of us right now. The world feels very much beyond our control. And now, again, this... Why do you think people have control issues? What are they trying to do? They're trying to control things because their life feels like it's not in their control. So, again, I could just be doing a very kind of surfacey thing that is not healthy. I don't know. But I will tell you right now I'm in the phase with it where it feels good to get up in the morning and be like even this fast that I'm trying to do. I had dinner last night, and then my goal is to just go ahead and, you know, just drink water and keep myself well hydrated and healthy today, but I'm not going to I'm going to try to not eat any food, and then I'll go to bed tonight and I'll get up tomorrow morning and I'll have some breakfast, and I want to see what that does, because that'll be a pretty good sustained amount of time of not eating. And I've been doing a lot of reading on it and hearing from listeners, and a lot of people use intermittent fasting. So I'm feeling like I'm feeling like I am taking control of some part of my life, which feels good. Now here's the bigger question though. Is there some kind of mutiny going on the Facebook page or somewhere where people are expressing deeply negative feelings about diet talk? Because I got not one, but probably three emails today that started with, I know a lot of people are really down on the diet talk, but I like it. And I haven't seen that. It hasn't come into my inbox, but I'm also not over on the social media channel. Am I on the wrong side of listener history here?
I don't know. I haven't seen anything publicly either, but I will say, because when I heard your intro today, I was like, okay, like I almost like I got to feel I'll just be honest. And this is going to be a little bit serious here for a second, because I'm kind of like thrown into the middle of something here that I don't know that I should necessarily be thrown into the middle of, if I can be totally honest with you. I've heard from a couple of different listeners who I know were talking amongst themselves who are like really, really concerned, and not just concerned about you, but also they find this talk to be very triggering because they've struggled with their own eating disorders over the years, which is a very, you know, serious thing. And so tuning in and hearing you, like, literally that, you know, as they say, talking about starving yourself for, you know, 34 hours or whatever it is.
Well, I'm not starving myself.
But that's the language that I'm just telling you about these emails that came in to me. Yeah. And you know, I haven't returned them yet, but maybe they'll hear this, or maybe they're just skipping this part of the show. I don't know. I'll be honest, it kind of puts me in an awkward situation. Like, you know, from before I was ever even on this show, you know, you've talked about this recently, that like your little adventures in weight loss was the backbone of the show for a long time, for better or for worse. There's a lot of other things in this show that we don't do anymore, like making fun of Guy Fieri. But we still call him Fieri, even though I know I will get an email
from
somebody.
Very subtle, subtle burn.
Because I'm not saying it in the proper way. Anyway, I don't know. This seems like your journey. I want you to be healthy. I'm not. Maybe I don't know enough about it to be like kind of freaking out about it. I also don't have a history with struggling with an illness related to this stuff. So for those people who this is triggering for, I do feel bad. But I don't know. I don't know what my role is in all of this, and I almost said something to you before the show, but I'm like, I don't know. This is other people are here for this journey.
Well, to the people that have been reaching out to you, I would say maybe reach out to me. Maybe part of it is they think that I don't check the email, which is sort of true sometimes, but obviously I have been of late. And also, yeah, that's totally like that's a tough spot for you to be in, Andrew, and I don't want you to have to be the intermediary there. So if you're somebody who is feels like this is something that's giving you a bad feeling or it's upsetting to you for some reason, reach out to me directly, because that's you shouldn't have to be mediating that, Andrew. To me, it's like, I mean, this show is us pretty much talking about our lives, you know, 5 days a week. And if in my life, what's happening for me, and I've been trying to be careful to just offer the caveat always that I'm not telling anyone how to be. I'm not saying there is an ideal way to be in a non-ideal, and I am achieving ideal. I'm just saying, for me, I get to choose how I want to be in my body, and I feel better when I'm not, you know, my BMI is not off the charts as it is currently. So I don't know. I want to be careful of the experience of the listeners, but I think part of the challenge is if we were to take topics off the table, every topic off the table that could give somebody a bad reaction, that could potentially leave us with very few topics on the table as far as our lives and how we're living our lives, because lots of things can be triggering for lots of people. So I think trying to walk the line between, you know, being really thoughtful about the listener's experience of listening and also just living our lives and being able to talk about it, that's kind of the trick there, I guess.
Here's where I think we can meet in the middle on this. I think that you should continue to talk about your fasting and your progress there. I think I should always retort with conversations that describe delicious food mm-hmm. in just the most minute detail. I mean, just like I'm going to George R.R. Martin this. I'm going to talk about
– like a sigil?
Well, one thing I always noticed in his books was anytime anybody's eating, he talks about the grease dripping down their chin, which actually wouldn't be appealing to you or me, really, because we're big napkin folk.
Right.
We hate having any kind of messy food. I'll go through and I'll kill an entire tree's worth of napkins to eat one rib. Can I just get one rib, though? That's the question.
Yeah,
but anyway, but I always think that George R.R. Martin just always talks about, like, when he really wants you to understand how good this feast is and how juicy the meat was, there's always juices running down people's chin. So I'm going to kind of lean into that and really just talk about all the food that is really tasty while you're trying to fast. How about that?
That's totally fair.
That?
and also, I just want to say, too, I'm not starving myself. Like, I think the initial just to maybe, if possible, allay some of the concerns of the listeners who maybe have reached out to you, Andrew. And again, I would just say, email me directly, luke@tbtl.net, and we can totally talk about it. And I won't, if you don't want, I'm saying now just to the listeners, if you don't want me to mention it on the air, I'm happy to not mention it on the air. But like, I think my initial plan was not a good plan. It was to just drastically reduce my calories 7 days a week, which people were very quick to like, and people with professional training were very quick to say, that's actually not going to have the outcome you're looking for. And so that's not what I'm doing. I'm eating the normal amount of calories I would on a normal day. And then I'm just trying to make those calories. Hopefully not all of them are going to be, plant-based chicken nuggets. Like, I'm just trying to eat stuff that's a little bit more healthy and a little bit more natural, but still getting plenty of calories. And then I'm trying to be good about the exercise. And then I'm going to try this thing, which is to take one day out of the week and see if I can go through it and do an intermittent fast, which many people do and people will tell you can be very safe. If I were intermittent fasting 6 days a week, that would sound unsafe to me, but we'll see how it goes. Let me
ask you this. Can I ask you a quick question? It's kind of a little bit of a pivot on the topic, but I'm being sincere. Like, I shouldn't use the word OCD because I'm not actually OCD, and we probably throw that around too much for people who actually do suffer from that. But I have these tendencies, right? You talk about wanting control in your life. I'm like, yeah, I'm like that. I'm scrubbing the sink until my fingers are bleeding. You know, like we all try to control our surroundings in a way. So I'm kind of obsessed with the idea of flushing things out and like having a clean start, whether you're talking about a hard drive on a computer, literally the pipes under the sink or cleaning things. So people talk about like flushing their system or doing cleanses, and that always sounds appealing to me, but I don't have the willpower to do it, right? Because like I love this idea of rebooting my own hard drive or cleaning out the pipes or whatever the good analogy is there, or not so good analogy, but I don't have the willpower to do the fasting that goes along with it. And I'm like, yeah, I'd rather have a rib, just one though. So now that you're going through the fasting anyway and you're doing the hard part, shouldn't you just be drinking some tonics or something and flushing your system while you're at it? Or is this going to make more listeners mad at me?
Probably.
Shouldn't you be drinking disinfectant to get rid of the COVID?
I was doing that. I've done many a juice fast and narrated it on this show as well. And my memory of that, of reading about the real science around if you can actually really flush out your system, I think what I remember is that it was pretty sketchy. Like, you know what I mean? Like the thing about the juice fast that I think basically had a good result for some people, if they were looking, I guess, maybe to lose weight, was you're just getting fewer calories in your system by way of this juice. But I don't think that there – my memory is that you can't really flush – Like that thing is kind of not, doesn't really work that way.
I don't know. If I made you a glass of water and I put some cayenne pepper in there, what else do we like?
Lemon is a thing they'll talk about in that.
Some lemon and vinegar and cayenne pepper. And I mix that up for you with one ice cube. Will
you
drink
tonight at about 10 p.m., I would kill for that.
That's like a trip to Dairy Queen.
Put some pepper in there. I'm going to chew this water. That's another thing that's been happening just this week. Again, let's all remember, too, we are 4 days into this. So I'm sure run out of steam by next week, and then we can go back to talking about whatever we normally talk about. But a part of what I've also been trying to do is just drink a lot of water. And actually, something you're really good about this, Andrew, you've always got that water bottle with you, and it's like thermos or something, right? Who makes that water bottle?
No, it's Rubbermaid.
Rubbermaid, right. I knew it was a pretty practical brand.
Finish your thought, but can we come back to that, though? Because I'm thinking about betraying that thing.
Well, I have... You know, you wouldn't think that the water bottle that I'm using would have come up so many times on the show, but it has. It is this, it's made by Mir, which is M-I-I-R. Sounds Scandinavian to me, I don't know. This was mailed to me by Barsuk Records, the great indie label out of Seattle, which has an adorable mascot, which is a dog holding a record in its mouth. And they just, I'm somehow on a mailing list of theirs where at like Christmas time, they'll send me something. So they sent me this water bottle. And what I have realized is the water out of this water bottle, because it's sort of pretty well insulated. So the water stays cold for a long time. It is delicious. We have this filter that's built into the refrigerator. I assume it says it's filtered. I don't know. I haven't changed it in a long time. It could just be regular water, but it's cold. That's what matters. I put it into this Barsuk Records water bottle, and I find it more pleasurable to drink than bubble water. And we go through so much bubble water in this house because when I'm thirsty, usually what I do is I walk over to the refrigerator, I pull out a can of LaCroix or Polar or whatever it is we have, and I crack it open, and I drink probably a third of it or two-thirds of it, which also leaves that very annoying, like, you guys don't have this because you do SodaStream, but this very wasteful feeling, kind of like some amount of carbonated water that's rapidly losing its carbonation. Well, anyway, I have started using this, particularly now that I'm doing this little project. I have been filling this Barsuk Records water bottle up 4 or 5 times a day and just enjoying the living tweedle out of this nice cold water that comes right out of the refrigerator and doesn't involve a can or anything like that. I don't have to buy it. But what it does also mean, Andrew, is I am waking up 3 times every night to go pee. I mean, I am – talk about flushing out your system. I am hydrated to my eyeballs right now.
I want to talk about my water bottle, but I got to tell you, man, I dodged a bullet the other day. I had the dream, my friend.
Oh, the dream. I had to go to the bathroom. I've been having the dream.
I woke up early in the morning, probably like, I don't know, 3 or 4, and I had to go to the bathroom pretty bad. And I was going to, but then eventually I went back to sleep. And I think that happened a couple of times. And then probably near the time my alarm was actually going to go off, let's say sometime in the 6 o'clock hour, I didn't even realize it until I was actually up out of bed and using the restroom that I was like, oh my God, I had the dream. Not only was I peeing in the dream, I was peeing someplace that I wasn't supposed to and then realized I'd peed all over something. I couldn't even remember what it was. It doesn't matter. It was just like, but I was like,
dangerous game.
I'm awake now thinking about it. I'm like, my God, I had to go to the bathroom so bad. Not only was I having the peeing dream, I was having the you're not supposed to be peeing here dream. That is red alert. That is DEFCON P, my friend. That is no
DEFCON
good.
P, possible show title?
Can I tell you my water bottle story, though? Because it's really boring and long.
Perfect.
So, you know, and I know I've kind of told part of this before on the show. I obviously water bottles have been a big part of society for a while now. I wasn't a huge water drinker, I think, maybe. But when you and I went on our hitchhiking adventure for the TBTL-a-thon a couple of years ago now, of course I realized, oh, I'm going to need a water bottle. So I was at the grocery store and I just bought, it's fine. It's just like, but a very basic water bottle. It's got a wide mouth, so when you unscrew it, you can dump in as much ice as you want, which I like. But it's Rubbermaid brand, which is just like the most basic you can be. And I know that we live in an era where, I mean, like a water bottle is like a fashion accessory, right?
Yeah,
like if you get the right one, very much so. What were the What were they? They weren't Cisco girls.
Girls.
Visco girls.
Oh, my God.
Cisco
please
girls.
Please let Cisco girls become a thing. Ooh, la, la. Just very stylish young people who love Cisco Morris gardening advice.
That's so much better. I was actually thinking about Cisco, the restaurant distributor.
Oh, would
be like,
yes.
Oh, no. I'm posing with frozen drumsticks. Anyway.
Or the thong song guy.
Or that. There's so many Cisco references. So I bought this water bottle, and then, and again, the world, everybody in the world had already had a water bottle. But then, you know, we come back from our adventure, and I keep using it. And like you say, like I would fill it with tons of ice and water and just keep refilling it throughout the day. And I would be telling people kind of as a joke, like, you got to try this water bottle thing. It's really changed my life. Mm. And I kind of liked the fact that it's very basic and that it's not, you know, that I'm not trying to say anything with it other than I want to be hydrated. And it served me well. And also, sorry, this is going to, couple of sides. I also have realized lately how much I miss things, not miss, but appreciate objects that I had in the past because I'm probably going through a midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. My mom sent me some old photos recently, and when you look really closely at them, you see things in the background of my childhood home, small, tiny things that are insignificant. But as soon as I would see it, I'd be like, oh my gosh, that basket. I remember that. Or this little tiny sewing machine toy. I could suddenly feel it in my hands. And so I appreciate, as I've said on the show before, this kind of connection that I feel like we have with objects and, mm-hmm. and how it can kind of take you back. And I sort of thought, like, I've had this water bottle now for 3 years or 2 years, whatever it's been. I use it every day. I use it almost every hour. Like, I'm developing some sort of a relationship with this object that someday I'll look back on. I'll see this thing in a photo, and I'll be like, oh, the water bottle. Literally, actually, one of these photos, I saw my purple mug, big, beautiful purple mug that I used to carry to the
Cisco
fiber.
Oh, you're a Cisco girl.
Yeah, to the fiberglass factory when I worked there every day. And I saw a photo of myself with it. I remember that mug so well. Anyway, so I love my water bottle.
Yeah.
Point is, now I think I want to betray it. And I'm struggling with this because it sweats, Luke.
Yeah.
In this hot water, man. It is basic, and because it's basic, it doesn't have all of the space age technologies that yours probably does.
Yeah.
So when I fill this thing with ice, and really I do, I fill it mostly with ice and then a little bit of water, and I let it melt, and I have cold water for the next hour or two, but it is just leaving puddles of water. I use a coaster, and the coaster, I have to throw it away afterwards. Like, it's destroying things in the house, and I know I can get a nicer one, and I almost went online yesterday and started looking, and I'm like, if I got a nicer one, I can get one that looks a little bit nicer. I could become a Cisco girl. Mm-hmm. Like, and then I look over and there's my little Rubbermaid water bottle looking at me and be like, what are you doing? What are you looking there on your computer at, Andrew? What's going on? It's nothing, water bottle. Just checking out the competition.
I love that you've anthropomorphized this water bottle and that in a way it probably represents you to yourself.
Yeah.
Like, practical, hardworking, no frills.
Yeah.
You know,
that's me.
Like, not trying to show off, not trying to be anything it's not, just trying to get the job done of keeping ice and water. But you know what?
Just a real Eli Cattleman over here.
But also, sadly, ineffective because it's sweating profusely.
You son of a. You know what? You said you want to do it yourself. Do it
well,
yourself.
Well, if you insist on talking about delicious mouthwatering ribs while I'm trying to fast, I just sent you a link. Now, this company, I guess we're just giving them a free plug now. I told you that this powder coated. That's the other thing. It has a nice, you know what powder coating is? That kind of paint style.
Yeah, yes, I do.
This has got a nice powder, like a matte powder coating on it. I really like this company Mir, which I said sounds very Scandahoovian. Actually, they're from Seattle, Washington. And I just sent you a link. I have found this particular product to be very, very useful, and it doesn't sweat, keeps everything really cold, and I really like it. So I sent you a link. They have lots of colors. I would just, you know, if you want me to, like, take your water bottle, your Rubbermaid water bottle, and just, like, you know, tell it we're taking it upstate where it can spend time with other very practical plastic water bottles with no insulating qualities.
God.
I can tell it that we're taking it to a farm. and then I can just straight up of Mice and Men it if you need me to.
Just hug. Wait, are you just going to hug the bottle? Yeah. Let me see. The big thing, though, is it has to be wide mouth. It is. It's wide mouth, so you can dump all the ice in there. That looks pretty good. What color would you go with? What color is yours?
Mine is black. Again, they just mailed it
to me.
Oh,
that's intense.
They just mailed it to me, but you've got a whole variety of colors that you can. We probably have listeners that work at this joint, right? It's a Seattle-based company. They make a cool thing. I think that we probably, I would bet that, yeah, they've got a 42-ouncer. That's a big boy. You could really get some,
That'll really make Rubbermaid jealous.
Now I feel, somehow you've managed to make me feel bad for an inanimate object that lives in your house.
I love it.
But what you could do then is, like, you could probably, again, this kind of came up yesterday with the talk about your Eli Cattleman shirt and how you wanted to get more of them, and how I often will get things in duplicate and triplicate. Then what I'll do is I'll create tasks for them, or I'll create roles for them. So I'll have like, oh, this is the water bottle that lives in the Toyota. So like when I got into these Rubbermaid ones for a while, which I like the look of them, but they're not insulated. I'm sorry, not Rubbermaid.
I was going to say, that's like mine. Yeah.
No, I forget the brand off the top of my head. But there was these very cool ones that are powder coated as well that I was into and talking about on the show. They're metal, but they're not insulated. So they do sweat a little bit, and they're not as good as this mirror one. But anyway, I went out and of course I bought one and I liked it. And so then I said, well, I need to have three of these. One that just lives in the Toyota. One that lives in the house, and one that, I don't know, is in some other place where if I need it, I can grab it, like maybe my hiking backpack, which, of course, I have a hiking backpack, Andrew, because if I'm going to go hiking, I want to have a backpack for that. Anyway, maybe the Rubbermaid can just take on a different role. Maybe it can live somewhere else in the car or the house, or it can be the one you take if you go for a walk. Maybe there's still some life to be lived for the Rubbermaid water bottle.
Yeah, you know, the truth is, the reason I can have this conversation right now, this is a true story. I'm actually sitting here next to an Aquafina bottle that I've refilled from the tap because I left my water bottle in the car. So my water bottle cannot hear me right now, which is why I'm comfortable having this conversation. If it was sitting next to me like it usually would, I would have chosen my words more carefully. I don't have to like throw it down into the volcano of Sauron.
Mm-hmm. That's from Star Trek 3, right?
I wasn't even trying to mess that up, and then I messed it up. Anyway, I don't have to destroy it forever, but I don't think that I want – I don't think it makes sense. Like, if I have something that, this is the car one, like, it still has to come in to get refilled. You know, for me, it's a lot easier just to have one that I carry around because I'm always refilling it. Like, I would need an ice maker in the car for it to be the car one.
I know. My proposal made no sense. I was just trying to think of a world in which the Rubbermaid water bottle would still have some purpose in life.
I think I should just make it watch me drink out of the new bottle.
Wow, now what it's getting going weird. On?
This is so gross. Let's take a break.
Why?
Weird.
Why are you now like some kind
of
bizarre
what's going on, Luke.
David Cronenberg film starring this Rubbermaid water bottle? Let's definitely take a break.
Sex, Lies, and Water Bottles? Can that be the name of the show?
That's a show title. 100%. Much better than DEFCON P. Sex, Lies,
I got it.
In Water Bottle. Okay. All right. Although, is that Soderbergh? Does that matter?
Oh, Cronenberg and Soderbergh. I get those guys confused
Cronenberg
all the time.
Cronenberg did Crash, right? He always does
those.
I'm not a Cronenberg head, for the record, as you would be deeply unsurprised to hear.
Right.
Those movies don't really speak to me.
But you are a Soderbergh guy.
I do like Soderbergh, but probably I probably tend to go towards his most accessible stuff.
Why am I even doing this? But did he like did things that were more accessible, like the – did he do Traffic?
Maybe I know Soderbergh did the Ocean's 11 movies, some of them. He did. Let's see Traffic. I get the feel with Steven Soderbergh, I get the feeling that he's like so talented he can make
Steven Soderbergh did Traffic. That's good.
I feel like he's talented enough that he can make kind of artsy movies that make you think, and then he can also, like Sex, Lies, and Videotape, I guess, and then also he can make, you know, popcorn movies like the Ocean's 11 films.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Cronenberg has that range. I don't know much about him other than whenever I'd hear him interviewed about a film and they'd be describing it, I'd think, I don't think that's a movie that is going to really work for me.
So he is the guy who did The Fly. I thought, I was like, okay, so he also started his career way earlier than, yeah, so they're not even really of the same generation, I'm realizing.
I think the thing that Cronenberg did that, I don't know why I need to, probably there's people love this movie, but like that movie Crash.
Yeah, I never saw that one.
I mean,
if I did, it was in college. I don't remember.
The idea, there is a line in Crash. I want to see, oh, you know what? Sorry, he did the Canadian version. Did he also do, no, Paul Haggis. Okay, now I'm glad we wasted everybody's time with this because this is actually important, Andrew. So Cronenberg did this Canadian version of Crash, which I didn't see, obviously. But then Paul Haggis, the director, did the American version. And that won, I think it won an Oscar. And there's literally a line in the movie where it's like somebody says, I think we're just so lonely in Los Angeles, we have to crash into each other. And okay. I was just like, that's the end of my relationship with this film. Like, I am not going to watch a movie where someone literally says with a straight face, we're so lonely, we have to crash into each other. Like, yeah, you crashed your car into someone to make a human connection. Next.
So, though, you know, I never realized that those were based on the same text or related in any way, because I'm looking at them. The one you're describing now, the 2004 version, I never saw that, and I didn't have interest. I did see this 1996 version. I don't remember anything about it other than it was scary and sexy. It was like psychosexual thriller.
Which
type
is very
of stuff.
Cronenberg-y, right? That's kind of his
I guess.
Vibe.
He's very dark. And now I'm realizing, and again, this is common knowledge to everybody. I don't know why we're doing this or why I'm doing this, but I didn't realize he's also the history of violence and Eastern Promises guy. So
Eastern Promises is good. Okay,
those are both good. Yeah.
I gotta give him props. I don't History of Violence. Those are both Viggo Mortensen vehicles, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I don't know if they exist in the same universe, but there's a lot of DNA shared. Between
right, it's like Viggo Mortensen is a dude with a past who you don't want to mess with. no, actually, I don't. History of Violence. I don't know if I saw it all the way through, but Eastern Promises is really good. So props to Cronenberg. And also now looking down the cast of the Americanized version of Crash, it starred, Sandra Bullock was in it. Don Cheadle was in it. Matt Dillon. Mm. These are the kind of above the line names, but you get a little bit lower down there and you see it also starred Chris Ludacris Bridges.
Oh, really? And that's the 2004 version, the new version? Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It's so sad to think that Ludacris was so lonely that he had to crash into people. Just to feel something.
I know.
All right. Let's take a long overdue break, almost 40 minutes into the show. And then we will be back and we'll do some top stories here on TBTL. Crash into us. Crash into us.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Our top story today, you sent this to me yesterday, Andrew, and I found it to be quite interesting. It's an kind of personal essay from Drew McGarry about trying to improve his handwriting. Now, Drew is a guy who writes a lot about sports. He was a big writer at Deadspin. He's written for GQ. He's written for a lot of places. I believe he's going to be part of the revamped Deadspin called Defector.
Indeed. Which technically, his byline even says co-founder Defector.
Oh, nice.
Give them all the love possible. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Starting in September. I'm very excited. He wrote a piece on Medium that you saw and sent to me, You Are Your Handwriting. And it's a typically funny, punchy, Drew McGarry type article or essay where he's just writing about how lousy his handwriting is. He says, I skip letters by accident. By the way, that is something I totally do. That's one of my biggest problems with when I write things out by hand. I drop letters. I don't know what is going on for me kind of mentally when that's happening, but I will write words and I will literally leave a letter out. And then I have to try to figure out a clever way to put the letter back in where there's not enough room for it.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
Like when I start writing by hand quickly, it is a roller coaster ride because it's sort of like my hand and brain are not connected totally. My hand is doing a thing that it kind of remembers, but it's also making a lot of mistakes along the way. And then my brain is realizing and it's going like, why did you do that like that? He says that he skips letters. He reverses them on occasion. I don't know if I do that as much, but he says, I can't read notes I've jotted down. I have to guess at what I was thinking about. That absolutely happens to me on this show sometimes. I'll be looking at a note I made on the show sheet, and I'll be like, what was that supposed to be about? Mm-hmm. So Drew decided to really try to like improve his handwriting by getting some worksheets and actually sitting down and doing these kind of filling. He skipped third grade. Like, he got promoted, you know, from second grade to fourth grade, which he says sounds like a humble brag, but actually it caused him to miss a vital year of penmanship, because that's a big thing you do in third grade.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't he put an aside in there, too, that I like, too, is, like, people think that handwriting, like, it doesn't have to be taught in schools anymore because so much stuff is digital and it's typing on phones and keyboards and whatnot. But, like, writing just for writing's sake isn't necessarily the thing. It's also, like, about it's about
cognitive development.
Yeah, exactly.
He says studies prove this is not true, the idea that handwriting is needless. He says, yeah, handwriting is vital to cognitive development, which I can kind of see that, because it's – in a way, I know for people that have good handwriting and don't think about it, it probably doesn't feel this way, but it feels like problem solving to me in a way. Like, it engages your brain mm-hmm. on some level that's probably good for you developmentally. I was surprised at this. He decided to try to improve his handwriting. He goes to the internet. He says, the handwriting subreddit has 166,000 users. Like, there's 166,000 people hanging out in a subreddit dedicated to handwriting.
And are they people who are struggling with it, do you know? Or are they people, because I don't remember this in the story, is it people who are just obsessed with doing it and, like, showing off how great their handwriting skills are?
Well, I didn't go to the subreddit, but he continues by saying, tutorial videos have millions of views, which is perhaps the only encouraging YouTube statistic I've ever seen. So people are watching videos about how to improve their handwriting. And presumably the subreddit is about that, improving your handwriting, analyzing people's handwriting, analyzing different backgrounds. I think I said this the other day on actually a LiveWire recording. I don't know if it made it on the show, but my mom's handwriting is super duper duper. She has beautiful handwriting, and it's because she went to Catholic school. And she has, like, Catholic school handwriting. And I don't know if you have this either, Andrew, because did you do, like, your K through 8 also at a parochial school?
No. My first year of Catholic school was 8th grade. And that was just for 1 year at that institution before I moved on.
Yeah, because the people that have, particularly, I think, women, not to gender it, but this has just been my anecdotal experience, women who are my mom's age who went to Catholic school their whole life all have the exact same handwriting. It's crazy how consistent it is.
How would you describe it?
It's hard to describe. It's beautiful.
Is it actual hand? Because this is one thing that I don't know if he raises this in the thing. It is cursive. So technically, handwriting is cursive. I think printing is what Drew is talking about. And I don't know if he ever, like, kind of acknowledges that. But so it's a type of cursive. Is it kind of like a very light, feathery cursive, the one you're talking about?
It's very efficient. It's very, like, it's not... It's how do I describe it? I don't know. It's just very specific, and yes, it's cursive, and it's just, if you know, it's like pornography. My mom's done a lot of it. No, it's you know it when you see it. Like, I've told this story before. Like, I think I was somewhere in, like, the Midwest, and the waitress, like, handed me the check, and I went, Catholic school, right? She went, yep. I was like, you and my mom have the same handwriting. I think it's because the nuns would just stand over them ready to whack their hand with a ruler if they didn't do it right. But yeah, that's cursive. You're right. Drew is talking about printing, but he talks also about how he does this thing that I do too, which is sort of lazy cursive. It's like printing where you just start connecting the letters because you don't want to pick the pen up off the page, mm-hmm. but it's mm-hmm. not cursive. That's not how any of this is supposed to work. And I have the exact same issue. I just have this weird scrawl that's just a combination of uppercase, lowercase, capital. It's just a mess. How's your handwriting?
I think it's pretty good. It's never as good as I want it to be, though. At a certain point, I started mimicking some of the, like, figures in my life, I want to say probably my dad, grandpa, and uncle, and myself. You could probably tell that we're all doing the same thing. I think we all write in all capital letter printing. And I probably got that from them, and also maybe working around engineers in my first job. I think that's very much in kind of a blueprinty. You know, one of my first jobs was filing blueprints of these big machines that my dad's company would make. And that was a hell of a job. These, whatever, I don't have to get into it, but these just big, you know, old school type of blueprint things, and you'd have to put them in, you'd have to file them away in these stacks. And they're just like organized by, I think, they were organized by number in some way that only makes sense if they're in order. So if you put one, like, in the wrong drawer, it's literally gone forever.
Oh, man.
Unless somebody stumbles on it. And I think it was like, and the numbers don't represent anything other than like order number. Like, mm-hmm. This was order number blank, blank, blank for the company. And so anyway, I'd put these things away, and I would love to look at the handwriting on them. Just like every letter was as well thought out as, you know, the diagram of the pump on the machine, right? It was just like every letter was a square block. And so I've always tried to do that. But for me, and people will compliment my writing and say, oh, you have such nice writing, because it is legible. But for me, it still always looks a little bit childish. Like, you can still sort of see that, like, I can't help but to think about you and I filling out all those postcards that we sent out. And like, you watch your handwriting kind of degrade over time as you keep writing, you know, it's been like 4 hours writing messages on postcards. And, you know, I would like, some of my lines are much bigger than the other lines. And, you know, I always want it to be much more uniform, but I would say that by most standards, I think people think I have nice writing because you can read it.
I think you have nice handwriting. It's funny. I weep for the people that got the postcards I signed. Because they were just like, it was just, you know, Sharpie and a kind of just a scrawl. I hope people could kind of read it. One of the things that Drew talks about.
But you kissed even every one of those, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. You didn't kiss.
See, that's something. No. So that's something. They got a kiss from you, which is nice.
Yes. I swacked. I sealed each one with a kiss.
Right.
Did you ever see that in grade school? Swack sealed with a kiss. That was a thing.
I didn't know what you were talking about until you explained it.
Yeah. You'd get, if you got a note. You got a note from a lady you were interested in circa fourth grade at Bagley, and they said, and they wrote swack on it. You were like, oh yeah, Jessica Baker.
You're in business.
My handwriting is really lousy. And I mean, Drew McGarry's point is, he says, your handwriting is the physical manifestation of your mind at work. It's a primal skill. Once you have those fundamentals down, you're better at everything else. Now, that might be an overly grand statement, but I have to say, it kind of resonated with me. And of course, I'm given, as we spent the first 25 minutes of the show talking about, I'm given to sort of extreme, like, extreme statements and extreme measures. So I might be over, that might overly resonate with me, but I do feel like I want to make my handwriting a little bit better, because it is, well, I'll tell you what. So when I was working on this TV story about watermelons in Oregon at the end of last week, we were on a bit of a tight deadline crunch. The producer of the story was in New York. Now, normally the producer would fly out to where the story was happening, but because of the pandemic, producers are not – no one's flying anywhere for any of these TV stories. If you can drive in a safe manner, then that's what happens, but otherwise there's no travel. So I drove down there, but we needed to send – this like a flash drive that had a bunch of footage on it back to New York so they could quickly input it into the system. And because the camera guy and the sound guy were busy getting more footage, it was my job to take this flash drive to like a mailing store in Hermiston, Oregon, and mail it along. And I want to tell you, Andrew, that like this was a great moment for me to sort of pump the brakes on my natural suspicion around people based on their outward signifiers. So this store was like a place where you could get like copies made, or you could send a Western Union, or you could do a whole bunch of different things, right? But it was also like, as soon as you open the door, it just had all of these kind of various motivational posters and things that were supposed to be kind of funny, and lots of like, I don't even know how to describe all of the writing on all of the walls, but it was all kind of associated with a woman of a certain age and a certain way of viewing. There were also a lot of crosses, a lot of religious kind of a lot of religious icons in this room. And my first thought when I walked in was like, boy, I'm really glad I don't work here. Like, this would be a place that I'd be bummed out if I was clocking in for 8 hours every day here. Well, what ended up happening was the women that worked there were so unbelievably lovely. They were adorable. And when I filled out the FedEx form, my handwriting was so bad that one, and she was the kind of gal who would be like, okay, hold on, move over. And then I moved over, and then she was across the aisle or across the counter. She had a mask on. I had a mask on. But she was like moving the form over. She's like, hold on. And she gets out a new form, and she has me read her the form that I filled out. And then she rewrites it in her own handwriting, which is impeccable. Nice. Like, nice. I thought she was mad at me at first. You know that kind of vibe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. I know exactly, like, that kind of vibe.
Like,
yeah.
I don't remember if this woman's name was Donna, but I assume it was. Like, where I was like, I was asking the one woman, I was like, A, how do I fill this out? Because I'm a moron. And then B, does this get typed into the system or is it just my handwriting? And the woman was like, it's your handwriting. And then she looks at it and she's like, I think it's fine. And, you know, my handwriting is going way out of the lines and it's going into boxes that are indicating if it's priority or not. Like, it's just a mess. And then the Donna lady comes over and she's acting kind of brassy, like I'm in trouble. But then really what she's doing is being a total sweetheart.
Yeah, it's just giving you a little bit of a hard time.
Yeah,
now,
but
can
in
I ask you a
the nicest
quick question?
Way.
Do you think Mo Rocca has to mail his own reports in like this?
This is a great question.
Like, do you think Andy Rooney did that?
I don't like to mail FedEx. Maybe that makes me bad. I'll tell you what's up, Andrew, if you want to know the real truth. I am in a low-key internecine battle with a guy who is another correspondent on the show named Lee Cowan. He's a fellow University of Washington grad. He often hosts that show Sunday morning when Jane Pauley is on vacation. He's based out of Los Angeles. He's a really good reporter and an even better human being. But what he does that has completely pwned me is he helps the camera guy and the producer and the sound guy carry gear. And everybody talks about it. He's probably maybe the highest ranking person that we have who's not a host on this show. He may even outrank Mo. He's definitely up in Mo Rocca territory. And yet he is such a mensch and he carries everyone's equipment that now that's – I have to do that just so I don't look like a complete jerk. And so I find myself running errands. I find myself trying to get water. I'm just doing everything I can – to try to seem as helpful as Lee Cowan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, we have to make you be fake nice. We need to get behind this effort. I mean, he sounds really nice, but we need to convince the world that you're nice, even though we know the truth, is what I'm trying to say there.
I know, it's killing me. It's absolutely killing me. What I want to do is parachute in, like the talent/prima donna I am. I want to pick up the 3 or 4 shots that they need me for, and then I want to get on a private jet and be gone. Mm-hmm. But instead, I'm carrying a very heavy camera on a tripod through a dusty watermelon field in Hermiston, Oregon, because I know that if Lee Cowan was there, he would be doing it.
Can I ask you a question about a shoot? I don't know if I've asked you this before, but when you are eating grapes on set, how does that go? Are you actually putting the grapes in your mouth yourself?
Well, a lot of it's different because of COVID. So it used to be that I would have the person who's my grape guy, Terry, I would have him hold the bunch of grapes at the stem, kind of Nero style. I like that.
Good.
I'd often be wearing
perfect.
A toga. But now, because of all the rules around COVID, I have him. He has like one of those, you know those things you can pick up litter with?
Yes, perfect.
It's one of
Good.
Those. It's really okay, long. And then he holds the grape stem with that. And then I have to actually, unfortunately, pull the grapes off the stem myself and feed them, which,
oh, wow.
you know. So we're. Yes. I'm just trying to say, Andrew, we're all making
sacrifices.
Do right now. We're all getting through best as we can.
Anyway,
well, so
hang in there, buddy. Hang in there.
Thanks. Anyway, my handwriting is not good, and I actually was looking at what Drew McGarry was doing, and I thought maybe I should do this. Maybe I should order or print out some handwriting sheets and see if I – now, what he ended up going to, though, was all caps, which
yes,
you said
I
is what you
that.
Do.
Yeah.
I think it's what my – I don't know if my dad does that. He mentions it because it's what his father does, and he likes his father's handwriting. And I've been, as we've been talking, Andrew, I've been writing little things. I wrote all caps printing. I wrote happy birthday in all caps. And then I tried to write I love you so much. I was trying to think of a thing I might be writing on a card to you at some point. So I wrote, I love you so much. Uh-huh. But I couldn't stay with all caps. It naturally slid into a weird thing I do where the first letter of each word is capitalized, but then the word itself is not, which makes, now, unless it was the title of a book, it would make no sense.
What do you think? Do people still write cursive at all? Like, because I gave up on cursive a long time. I would say maybe of our generation or younger. Like, is cursive really even a thing anymore? I assume they still teach it in school because of the brain development, like we talked about. But generally speaking, anybody signing anything or writing, I would be interested in knowing anybody who's like, I don't know, maybe 30 and younger, if they are actually like writing in cursive. I have no idea.
I feel like cursive was necessary when the only options were a typewriter or writing things out by hand. Because, of course, the advantage of cursive is it's faster than printing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so to me, it's like I see the value of printing. I think they should probably still teach printing. But I don't know if they need to, and I don't know if the brain development thing applies to cursive as well as printing or just cursive. It seems to me like, honestly, we don't probably need cursive anymore because it was designed as a way of writing really fast if you were writing pages and pages of text.
I think I've mentioned this before, too. I still kind of doodle in cursive. Like, I never write in cursive, but if I'm, like, in a meeting or anywhere where I'm just kind of doodling, I will just start kind of drawing L's and E's, which are basically the same thing, and looping things around. And then next thing you know, I'm writing the word little out because it's a very satisfying word to write in cursive.
Oh, yeah. Capital L or lowercase L?
Lowercase. I consider the uppercase L in cursive to be very awkward. I don't like those standalone. And it's also just like an L with a little loop on the end of it.
Slow your roll. That's the first letter of my name, and I have a lot of affection for it because if you make the L really big and looping, you make the bottom loop, you make a straight line, you turn it into a straight line, then you can basically, that can just be the, if you look at any of the postcards I sent out, it was like an overly large cursive L within some scribble after it.
Yeah, I'm okay with my handwriting. I don't like my signature very much. I mean, now it's basically like an A with a scrawl after it as well, which is, it just seems a little bit lazy to me. I think that it really degraded over time. I have another question for you. And again, Drew doesn't get into this, but Drew is talking about, or I kind of scanned that article. So honestly, if he did get into this, I'd be interested to know. But he talks about his handwriting being, what does he say, your ambassador to the world or something along those lines? Like, this is how people are judging you, and it is important. He also says, now I know a lot of the stuff we do these days is digital writing. Do you think there's a correlation between the people who have sloppy handwriting and also will send out an email with, like, a lot of typos? Because I feel like typos and lazy shortening of things is the bad handwriting of email.
I could see why you have that theory, and maybe you're not wrong, but what's weird is I'm very generally meticulous about the emails that I send and the texts that I send. Like, I really try to keep the typos to a minimum. I don't know if this is putting them on blast. I say this with peace and love because he's one of the smartest people that I know in the world. But our friend, Mike Pesca, I've never gotten a message from him that didn't have three typos in it. Like, and again, Mike is certifiably brilliant. So it's, I don't know what the connection there is. I think in his mind, it's just like, yeah, you know, you know what I'm saying. It doesn't matter that there's a typo in here because I'm wandering down a street in Manhattan doing 9 things and I wanted to say something. So maybe he's even just talking into his phone. I don't know. But I try to not have too many typos, but I have crap handwriting, so I don't know.
Yeah, no, I actually, when I was saying that, I was thinking of you as well, because your emails, and you know, at least the ones that I see, and especially the ones that I'm like copied on the occasion that you're writing something to, I just thought of something. I was going to say, when you're writing things to, like, let's say, I don't know, something TBTL business related that I need to be copied on, I can tell that you are very meticulous with it. In fact, have I ever, and I will cut this out if this is putting you on Front Street too much, have I ever been copied on an email that you have written that you have intentionally messed a couple of things up because you want to give the impression that you don't care enough.
Wow. No. I mean, I've never done that consciously. So this would be you telling me that I have sent an email that I CC'd you on that there were mistakes in it.
Yeah, I don't know how much to say. I know your emails to be pretty meticulous. And also, like, I am thinking of a very specific example from a while back now that I could talk to you about off air, where I feel like you, because I know that you don't have a lot of typos in your thing, I remember the vibe that we both had with somebody that we were dealing with in the business world, and you sent an email that had some just kind of like, it wouldn't be out of sorts, it wouldn't be like super off-putting to receive this, it wasn't terrible, but there were a couple of things where it's just like a sentence didn't begin with a capital letter, and I really interpreted that as you, as a negotiation move or a somewhat maybe a power move of indicating how much you care about this particular email.
Okay, now that's possible, that I might have written lowercase or – yes, I guess I thought you meant like I factually had something wrong intentionally.
No. But that you would put a typo or something in there, just be like your way of saying whatever, dude.
Yes, I could see that being a thing where I respond from my phone. If you get a message from me that's written on my phone, it says iPhone regrettably. That's the auto signature. And I could see maybe writing it in a way that feels very casual to sort of indicate exactly what you're saying. I don't think I do that a lot, but I could see me doing that as a way of trying to send some subtle message about what the amount of time I'm willing to invest in furthering this particular line
yes,
of conversation.
That's well put.
So you probably – you and I are so dialed into each other's frequencies at this point. It's honestly troubling. But I'm sure that's exactly what I was doing.
Yeah. We'll talk more after the show. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
There's a right way to rock and a wrong way to roll. You can just listen to your soul. Just remember that life is number one. You can be having so much fun. Just remember that life is much fun. You can be number one.
Hey, Luke, you want a blurs on a thurs?
Oh, yeah, man. Also,
let's do this.
Hopefully this is a relatively short thurs blurs, because as I've been talking about all the water I've been drinking.
Are you having the daydream?
I am. Yeah, I'm deep in a dream right now where I'm going number one somewhere I shouldn't be. So we got to make it relatively quick here.
I wish I could remember what I was peeing on in that dream. It probably doesn't help you, me, talking about this, but I feel like it was like computers or something, which makes me kind of like a Calvin and Hobbes, like, this is Macintosh country.
Oh, right. You meant like the Calvin peeing thing. I was going more like kind of high-level philosophical place where like Calvin and Hobbes are debating. Literally, Calvin and Hobbes are debating, you know, if machines make our world better or not.
I see, right.
You know, that's a thing that I have been, here I am, extending this segment instead of making it more efficient or more brief. You know, obviously a lot of people, I loved Calvin and Hobbes when I was a kid, but I just loved the animation, if you will. I loved the drawing. Mm-hmm. I didn't get any of the like larger kind of philosophical implications of that. And it's only now I feel like Calvin and Hobbes has kind of had a moment with the internet where a lot of people have revisited it and they've put out panels which are very deep in the subject matter that they probe. That was all over my head when I was a kid.
Yeah, I don't know if it was all over my head, but I definitely would say that I have a more of an appreciation of it because I was such a Far Side kid. And like, not that you can't love both, but like Far Side is what I was obsessed with. And then as I'm older, not that it has to be a competition, but I feel like Calvin and Hobbes might resonate with me a little bit more. And those old cartoons, I think I appreciate them more the older I get.
Hmm. All right.
All right, this is from Laura, who says, I'm last minute and may not make it. Happy birthday to friendo Molly from Laura in Toledo. I think that one came in after the show last week. So
nice.
A little belated, but not bad. We got it in there. Don't worry about it, Laura. Olivia in Maryland says, would you please wish my beloved Five a happy Blur's Day? Bash is turning 6, and I could not be more proud of him. He's funny, kind, curious, and smart. He's the traveling king and has already been to 6 countries.
Whoa.
The 6-year-old has been to more countries than I will ever go to. I love watching movies, laughing, and going on adventures with him, and I love him more every day. And that's from Olivia to Bash.
Man, Bash, that's a cool guy name.
Yeah, I know. Sarah Beth in Madison, Wisconsin says, happy Blur's Day to my Five, Hendrick, who's turning 3. Now, I'm gonna draw some lines here in a second, okay. Luke. Sarah says, around here, he's known as the Blonde Mayhem. He spends his days delighting and bewildering us with his sunny smile and penchant for property destruction. Now, doesn't this sound like Bash?
I would think Bash would
be the guy going around, yeah, bashing everything up. But there you go.
If they're not the same person, then they sound like they'd be friends. You know, they might like my nephew Daniel. I told you I was going to try to do a Hey Dummies video yesterday because he was visiting, but he got here and then he just immediately took off all his clothes and then was just running around in the yard, au naturel, and occasionally like trying to ride Rudy like a horse. And I thought, I don't know what the legal is on me putting him in the video in this state. So I have to
say let me say it ain't that kind of newsletter, guys.
Yeah, so I have to – it ain't that kind of Substack, people. So I have to do the video today because we don't have any adorable but unclothed children running about in the yard.
Good. I prefer it that way. Sarah Beth goes on to say about Bash, he loves veggie. I'm sorry, not Bash.
Yeah, I was going to say, have we established?
No, this is Hendrick. Sorry. I'm ruining your birthday, Hendrick. Hendrick loves veggie dogs, actual dogs, and talks about the garbage a lot, so you're definitely making an impression. Happy Blur's Day. Sorry, I messed up your name.
I called him Kendrick, which actually would be kind of cool, too.
Did I say Kendrick? I thought I said Hendrick.
I think that might have been my speech impediment. Threw a Kendrick in there.
Mm. Hess in Nashville says, I want to wish Megan. Hess. We do. And we love Megan of Horsehead, New York.
Oh, yeah.
Happy Blur's Day.
Right. Was Megan? Megan was the one that gave me that coffee from Ithaca.
Uh-huh.
That
was gorgeous.
So delicious.
We met over 2 years ago when I was living in Korea, and we've been imaginary friends ever since. I hope she has a fabulous birthday with a nice drink and a long nap. But get this.
Okay.
Hess ain't done yet.
Okay.
I also want to wish my 11, Chris, a happy Blur's Day.
Oh,
he
nice.
Said the cutest thing this week. He asked if he qualifies to be a full-fledged 10. I've always played TBT. I always have TBTL playing, and recently he's been downloading the show on his own. So does downloading the show finally classify an 11 converting to a 10, asks Hess.
Yes, absolutely.
So. Yeah,
100%.
Because
he also... I believe that we got to see a very quick glimpse of Chris when Hess zoomed in on one of those virtual hangouts that we did during the Thon week. And I want to say Hess was showing us around their place in Nashville, and they had a room full of some kind of collectible. And I've, of course, now forgotten what that was. But I believe that he didn't. I think if you've made an appearance on a TBTL Zoom call, you're definitely a 10 status at that point.
No, I shouldn't even extend this, but you're not thinking of Bette in New York, are you? Who showed us around her husband's
Bette had her kid with her.
Right. Okay.
But I could see how you could confuse Bette and Hess because they're both monosyllabic first names.
Well, it was... It was the showing off of the collection that got me, because I remember she was showing off Legos. But anyway, neither here nor there. Happy Blur's Day, Chris. Happy Blur's Day, Megan of Horsehead.
Yay.
Our buddy Jamie in Mississippi says, happy Blur's Day to Laurel. Oh, wait a second. Is it Yanni? Does it sound like Laurel or Yanni when I say that?
Right.
Laurel is my TBTL baby, and I'm so proud of her. She is now in Seattle getting her PhD in computational fluid dynamics.
Right.
From A to B. she's headed to Germany as a Fulbright scholar.
Are you kidding me right now?
But I still count her as a Mississippi 10 because we need the numbers. I think Blur's Day, Laurel. Congrats.
That's amazing. I feel like we hung out at the Mariners game a while ago, Laurel and I. I mean, I've seen Laurel at various events, but that's... Wow, Fulbright Scholar? Are you kidding me?
I know.
Are we, by some connection now, are we co-Fulbright Scholars because we make a show that Laurel likes?
I think so.
That's,
I mean,
how that
we'll,
works.
We'll talk to the the commission, the Fulbright Scholarship Commission, but... Should work out. How about this? How about this? From Katie in Tacoma. Although I'm seeking a... I'm just like... God.
I know.
I'm just turning into the Stubot. Although I'm seeking a Blur's Day shout out... Would I say the Stubot?
You said Stubot. You said Kendrick.
I think I said Kendrick. Although I'm seeking a Blur's Day shout out for myself, says Katie in Tacoma, I want to thank the TBTL family. It's been a tough year for me and my 11 and for so many people. I've never been more grateful for this podcast, the Slack channel, the Facebook page, and the whole community. As I celebrate another year on this planet, I lift my glass of adult beverage to all of you. That's from Katie in Tacoma to all of us, to all of you. Happy Blur's Day, Katie.
Sorry, it's been a rough year.
Yeah. I mean,
it's been rough on all. This is rough on me right now, not peeing my pants, but
yeah,
let's not center me in the story here.
Just trying to mail your own USB drives back to New York. Jennifer says,
by the way,
I'd like to wish
can I mention on that topic?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that Donna, we're just going to call her Donna, I thought Donna was joking after we fill out this elaborate form, which is going to take this, you know, somewhat substantial flash drive. It wasn't like a thumb drive. It wasn't in the parking lot. It wasn't a lucky day. It was one of those larger ones. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly. It's like hard drive.
And it kind of has a little rubber, almost like outer thing, I guess, probably to protect it.
Yep.
We fill this whole thing up. This is going to go from Hermiston, Oregon on up Friday afternoon, and it is going to be in Avalon, New Jersey, where our producer was working from home, the next morning at 8 a.m. And after we fill all this out, she goes, I think a $5 should do it. And I thought she was totally joking. It was $5.
This place is the best.
How about that? Explain the... Like, I know the other day I said this, and I regretted it immediately. I was like... talking about something that seemed cheap, and I was like, what's the profit sort of system there? And you were like, do we really want to get into that? And I was like, oh yeah, good point. No, we don't. That being said, this has less to do with Amazon fulfillment or sweatshop labor. This is just somebody from FedEx was willing to drive/fly this thing across the country over the course of 12, maybe less than 12 hours. And it cost me a grand total, or I should say it cost CVS a grand total of $5. That's crazy.
Maybe the shipping is a loss leader. Did you buy any, like, Papermate pens while you were there?
I did. I bought pens. I bought various religious tracts and
iconography.
Posters. Iconography.
this little statue of Jesus only costs you $400, but... you can ship it across the country for $5.
You know what struck me about that place and why it's so, like, I'm telling you, just like the vibe, it's the aesthetic of the place was not really my aesthetic, was because not only did they have all of these little posters around that just had all this, like, way too much writing on them saying way too many things, like, for me, then there was a lady who I'm sure also was a very nice lady who was waiting her turn, and she had on, like, a t-shirt with all this writing about, I don't know, grandma of the year or something, but it was just, like, too much script. And then she had a hat that was part of the package. It also had all this writing on it. It was like a hat that had like a metal, like a Janet Jackson Rhythm Nation kind of thing going so that it could have more writing on it. And I was like, where am I right now that the customers are also presenting to the world in this graphical nature?
In what part of the country again?
Hermiston, Oregon.
Oregon, yeah. Huh. Well, I'd like to see the bumper sticker rates in that community as well. Maybe just a lot to say. Yeah. Jennifer says, I'd like to wish my 5 Judah a happy 2nd birthday. Te amo, Judah. Love, Maymaw and Papa.
Te amo?
Te amo. I think that's I love you.
Oh, yeah.
Te amo.
Yeah, te amo.
Now, here's this. So that was the last official Blur's Day, so
okay,
raise that. But now I got this.
I already
Molly
peed my pants, so we're fine. Oh, just take as long as you want.
Yesterday, I was talking with you about an uncovered memory I had, which was a record, a little like flimsy record I had as a kid.
Yes.
That had a birthday song on it, and they cranked a whole bunch of these things out in the what's that?
I was actually wondering if today you were going to use that that particular record as the intro for the birthday, because I got to say, had we not stumbled upon the Tim Heidecker bass solo and made the whole package that you made, which is now, of course, the tradition. That thing, whatever that guy, Spaceman 5000 or something, that's like that's a great birthday intro.
But it's all one person's name. That's the whole thing about those records is they're customizable. So would I have to get the song for every single person? Or tens? Could we get one made that's just kind of like that you put the name tens?
No, it's just we pick one, like Kevin, and then only people named Kevin can have be wished a happy birthday. It drastically reduces the Blur's Day messages, which, you know, I know would make your life easier. And actually just kind of gets us out of a couple of jams.
What if, instead of even playing any music at all, we just come back from the second break of the show? I just say every week, happy birthday, Kevin, and then we wrap it up.
I'd be fine with that.
Done and done. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So they were called Captain Zoom, right? Mm-hmm. I think was the name of those records. And I, again, big in the 70s and 80s, and you would request them for the child in your life, and then they'd have a song. It's like, happy birthday, Andy. So Molly says, so about 10 years ago, my sister found this amazing YouTube video and sent it to me for my birthday. Luke, I got to say, this came in while you were doing your intro, so I don't even know what I'm getting into here, and I'm really trusting Molly that she's not sending me down a dead end path here. But she says, we grew up with specialized birthday cassettes, but this Zoom birthday message to Molly has made my birthday more special every year since. It just so happens my birthday is August 11th, so this was a perfectly timed conversation from you and Luke. Take a look at this link and then fast forward to the 2:10 mark. Now, I don't know exactly what is going on here. I'm opening this for the first time. The subject of this YouTube video is Captain Zoom sings happy birthday to Molly. Now, it looks like this is an actual live action thing where we see some people dressed up like aliens and rocketeers potentially on the moon.
Okay.
This is Space Command to Zoom.
Okay.
All systems are go for your message to Molly.
So this is the song. This is the original song.
Hey, Molly. It's your birthday.
So, Luke, they're making visual versions of this now with, like, kind of cheap backgrounds and, like, funny kind of cheap outfits. This guy is kind of dolled up in tinfoil and some sort of space clown makeup.
Is he singing along or are they still photos?
He's singing along and dancing. It's got a very Mystery Science Theater 3000 vibe to it.
Today. A present for you.
Okay, now if you'll recall, Molly said that we should now fast forward to about the 2:10 mark. I will go to 2:05 and ramp up to it.
See you next year.
Okay, now everybody in the skit is just laughing.
Guys, I have like 4 whole strips of acid in here, and I don't know what...
Wait, are they on acid?
So I think the joke is that everybody who was part of this was on acid. So this is amazing. I guess they were lip syncing. I don't know what this is. They were lip syncing to the original Molly music, maybe.
So those must be friends of Molly's, maybe?
Maybe. I can't tell if this was something that was made specifically for her, if it's something that was found or what have you. But there it is. And I will just say happy Blur's Day to Molly.
What I saw yesterday as the scales were falling from my eyes and I was learning about this for the first time, I noticed on YouTube that a thing people have done is they'll take the song, let's say it's for Andrew, and then they'll just do a slideshow where they'll put a bunch of pictures of the Andrew that they're fetting, celebrating. They'll just put that over that. It'll be like a YouTube video. So it's the song that we now all know, but with pictures of the person. It's a very adorable thing. So maybe this is sort of a version of that. People taking the music and then kind of adding their own artistic spin to it.
Stop the show.
You guys, I'm actually legitimately stopping the show here for a second. Luke and I have actually finished recording, but I realize that I forgot a Blursday in today's segment. I don't know how this email eluded me when I was doing my show prep today, but I hate it when this happens. So let me see here. Can I get the Blursday music back up here? This is from Jen in Bellingham, who says, "Happy Blursday to my youngest five, Harrison. I love that you work so hard on your drawings and origami while I work on my own projects. You inspire me, and I love you so much. Happy 8th birthday, Harrisoni Macaroni." They rhyme. Sorry for missing that. Sorry for interrupting the flow of the show. Now let's get back to the originally scheduled programming. Luke, how is your bathroom situation?
Not great. So I would vote that we go ahead and kind of wrap things up here. Did you want to go out with a cool and the gang inspired or a song that uses that Cool and the Gang song that we
I liked your idea of saving those for our special 2 weeks of TBTL Summer Games, and I'll vet them a little bit and maybe not choose them on the fly, but I will go out with a Best Coast song called Summer Mood, and maybe it'll bring the sunshine with it.
I know, man. It's crazy. I complain all the time about it being too hot, and then today it was raining, and I was just it immediately transported me into a bummed out place related to, like, let's say mid-November in the Northwest. So,
hey, Luke, the sun will come out tomorrow.
Bet your bottom dollar. Hey, actually, can we get some action on that? Would you be, what's the line in Vegas on if that's going to happen or not? All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. God, is tomorrow Friday already?
It is.
What in the holy heck? Okay, we'll see you then. Until then, enjoy your Thursday. Stay dry. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Out.